All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast. It's Wednesday. It's January 9th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Oh, we're going to be breaking down a big Wednesday in basketball. We'll also be live Twitch streaming leading into lineup lock tonight, so go check that out at twitch.com/DFSRpodcast. We'll be posting a link in the show notes as well as we bring... We bring our tools on the road, but then I realize I'm just be doing it for my office. But we bring our tools more to the video format, getting people ready for a lineup lock. So go check that out as well. But right now we're gonna break down a Wednesday in basketball. Five teams on back to backs. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here in terms of minutes. But are you excited to talk to me now and over video later as we Twitch stream, or is it like too much to handle and you want to just get into basketball right away?
It might be too much to handle. It's just kind of being with you. It's like just drinking out of a fire hose of knowledge, you know? And like most men, it's like when you're going to, I'm trying to think of an analogy most people would understand. It's like, you know, when you grow seedlings inside, most men will understand this. When you grow seedlings, why are you laughing? When you grow seedlings inside, you need to like harden them off by bringing them outside just a little bit at a time. You know, the full, they're just used to your crappy grow lights in your basement. Now it's the full force of the sun, which powers our whole planet. That's kind of what it's like talking to you all the time. You're the sun to the grow lights of most people's commentary. So I'm used to it, but just to be warned, if you listen to the podcast, you might not want to tune in for the Twitch stream as well.
You got to be going, buddy. It was good. I know that was off the cuff, so I'm even more impressed. All right, let's get into a full Wednesday of basketball. A bunch of teams on back-to-backs. I think it's five teams on back-to-back with some. One is a home-and-home between Philly and Washington, which we're going to get into. There is some injury news. Some teams switched things up yesterday that I want to pat ourselves on the back on a little bit. We were on in terms of just kind of like where to pivot last night, which we'll get to here in a second. But we'll go game by game, breaking it all down. The first one, like I mentioned here, is Philly and Washington. Now, Philly blew out the Wizards last night. They're just going to head down I-95, and they played in Philly last night. They're going to play in Washington tonight. None of the Philly starters were really pressed into action. Everyone played way less in their minutes because they just won by... The score ended up looking closer than it was. They were up by like 30 at one point in the fourth quarter. Last night, we did play Embiid. He was decent on a per-minute basis, but got really buzzed off the minutes. The system likes him again tonight. They're 2.5-point favorites. Got a decent total here, 228. So let's talk about the Philly side first. How worried are you about the back-to-back? I know people are going to say, you know, people like in our chat are going to say, oh, Embiid again, not really seeing the forest for the trees, to continue your growth analogy, that you know, he lost the minutes because of a blowout. Would you be comfortable rolling him here on a back-to-back against Washington? Are you at a bigger slate? Could you see yourself going somewhere else? Let's start on the Philly side, and then we'll talk about Washington.
Yeah, I think I could play the Philly guys. I mean, the thing is, you know, this is a concept we have to bring up in every sport every single year, it seems like. But guys get cheap because they have short-term variance, typically. And that's when they become good plays. So, like, we didn't play Embiid for, it was like 12,000 or yep, just under 12,000 against Dallas. And he was overwhelming chalk. He was like 61%. He sucked. He scored 51 fantasy points. And you move on with your life. Now that he's 10,800, you just have to ask yourself, has anything fundamentally changed about Embiid in the last two games that makes him go from a guy who was almost 12,000 and 61% owned to now being a guy who's 10,800 in a plus matchup? Like, it's just, he's too cheap, in my opinion. I think, you know, the season-long sniff test on the price looks solid to me. I'm not too concerned about the matchup with Bryant. I think it's a good spot to play him. And again, since he was so good on a per-minute basis, you really just have to ask yourself, are we worried about the blowout again? And I think that's probably overcautious in a game with a 2.5 spread right now.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the blowout here. You know, yeah, it's funny. I talk about watching sports and how sometimes watching sports can sometimes be a detriment when you play fantasy sports, right? Because you can, your vision, like for instance, it's terrible to watch baseball if you're really into fantasy baseball, because it'll just throw you off. You'll think you see things you don't. I will say basketball. Exactly. I see football kind of exists in the middle, because I think it's really hard for people to understand some of the...
Depends how good you are at watching football. That would be.
I'm going to say the average fan, right? I think the average fan can watch basketball and take some things away without having deep knowledge of it. And the reason I say this is because if you watched the Sixers last night, there was almost this thing where you could see where Embiid was like a fingertip away 15 times from having an enormous game, right? Like you know, the rebounds just miss him, or they're in mismatches that he just doesn't get there. So I think that, like, I think if they kind of roll with the same game plan, I think you could see Embiid with just a monster game here, especially if it stays close. Like, the Washington switched Decker onto him a million times. It just wasn't working. I really love going back to Embiid here. They've not managed his minutes on back-to-backs, and I don't want to make the whole podcast about him, but the mostly just saying that I'm totally fine going back to him tonight. There's some chance, I guess, they rest Butler on the back-to-back. That's not anything that we need to pay attention to, I don't think, until we hear definitive news. J.J. Redick sat out last night. Furkan Korkmaz got the start, but Shamet was the guy who just bombed threes. That was the other reason the game got out of hand. He hit like 7 threes in the first three quarters. So anyway, I think fine going back to the Sixers. On the Washington side, Porter was supposed to have his minutes increased to 30 minutes last night. Always a little bearish on stuff like when people say that, especially when the guys are still coming off the bench. He only played 19 and that had his hands x-rayed. If he were to sit again, and I think there's a chance that he will, would you be comfortable pushing the Washington, like these wing guys, like the Arizas and Greens of the world, maybe even Beal too, to max minutes? And at that point, would we want to maybe roll these guys out again? Because their prices have dropped a little bit as they brought Porter back into the mix.
Yeah, Ariza about 400 cheaper than his peak price. I think he was up to 6,800 on FanDuel and was playing 39 to 40 minutes a game. I don't see any reason why that wouldn't continue to be the price. I think especially Ariza, you know, his skill set is really needed to, you know, match what Philadelphia brings to the table in terms of just like, you know, really effective wing play. And I think you could see a lot of Ariza. I think Green too. I mean, we were seeing, he's like, the price hasn't moved back quite as much on him. In fact, I think he's right around the exact same price actually. But yeah, we were seeing 35 to 38 minutes. I think either of those guys would be tolerable for your cash game purposes. I guess, like, you know, I'm a little bit newer into the slate than you are at this point, so I'd have to see what the other options look like. But right now, if they showed up in my lineups, I'd be fine with it, assuming Porter was out.
Yeah, like I said, have Porter be out. And I will also just say, and we'll move on from Washington, I will say again, when you see it, you know, I kind of made this mistake because I saw the note on Porter last night, and I'm going to bring this up just from a process standpoint because I think people get interested in like how we sort of make determinations. You know, I saw a note that last night that said Porter would have his minutes increased to 30, and I took him all the way to 30, and in retrospect, that was a mistake because no bench players play 30 minutes. Like, there's just no bench player. And as long as you're coming off the bench, there's too many ways to get less than 30 than there are to get more, and that was a mistake that I made, and I regretted it almost instantly because he was like a 50% start and really just should have been, injury aside, that I should have taken him the max minutes on a bench guy. So anyway, just a little peek behind the curtain about how we try to figure out minutes audits and things like that. Let's move on. Indiana goes in and plays Boston. Boston's 6.5-point favorites here. They are getting healthy as they bring Kyrie back. They're getting Horford back into the mix. Indiana looks like they're going to be without Miles Turner again. They started Sabonis again last night. He was a heavy chalk play, something like 80% in FanDuel contest. We actually pivoted a little bit off of Sabonis and went to Thad Young. That worked out. Thad had a great game last night, played big minutes. They are on the back-to-back. How do you feel about Sabonis is getting expensive? He's a good fantasy per minute play, 7,000. I guess I take that back because his price didn't really tick up at all. If Turner was out again against Boston, would we be comfortable playing Sabonis again? I could see him being another chalk play again. Not nearly as good a matchup on this slate that he had Cleveland last night. Not nearly as good a matchup here against the Celtics.
Yeah, that echoes my thoughts. I think the price is probably fair for him in a neutral matchup, or maybe even good for a neutral matchup. You have something less than that here going up against the Celtics front court. So I think that is probably enough for me to at least not make it a reason I would show up to this slate, right? I mean, Boston with Tatum, Horford down there, playing a top three defensive efficiency this season with a bottom 10 pace. So typically when I'm going to play guys against teams like Boston, I really need like a really good reason. And typically that comes from increased opportunity. And while Sabonis has that, I'm just not sure it's enough to pay down the pretty significant price tag here.
Yeah, he went 15-9-4 last night. So a good game. He went more than 5x. He had 3 steals, which kind of buoyed some of his performance. And then, like I said, Young had the 26 points on 5 rebounds. I would be cautious about going back to him as well. Again, I was fine playing him last night, but he went 11-14 for the field. Went 3-3 from 3. That's never going to happen. This guy shoots like 25% from 3. So you got a top 2% scoring game out of Young, basically. I wouldn't be comfortable going back there. And the rest of those guys stayed healthy. Like, there was some question about Collison and Kojo going into the game, but those guys all played. On the Boston side, are we just seeing them too healthy at this point? When we've seen their rotations go very deep, these guys don't play a ton of minutes as Stevens still tries to figure out rotations. Do we kind of just need to wait for Boston injuries till we really start considering any of the Celtics?
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. You know, they're another team we've talked about ad nauseum typically fairly priced guys, and occasionally someone gets injured, and then you get to play the odd Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart or whatever. But by and large, the Celtics aren't part of our daily fantasy rotation here.
Lin Sanity went off last night. Atlanta, now they're going to play in the back-to-back. They're going into Brooklyn. That was a guy, he was announced into the starting lineup about 10 minutes before, and he became an every lineup guy for us, and he was really under only 10% start. I felt a little worried about it because it's Atlanta, and I felt more comfortable because he did fit the bill of guy that was already playing minutes, guy that's a decent points per dollar play anyway. And now
going up against Toronto too, and I was going up against Brooklyn.
I know. Well, so okay. The news here, though. So anyway, Atlanta goes in and plays Brooklyn. Brooklyn's a 9-point favorite. So look yourselves in the mirror here, Atlanta. But the news here is basically all Kevin Huerter, because Lin got the start for Huerter, right, which was a little bit of a surprise because they played Lin and Young next to each other and actually hung with Toronto and played pretty well. But we're going to get that news ahead of time. Would you feel comfortable going back to Lin here? The price didn't get to move at all because this thing had already been locked into place. He's only 4,400. If Lin were to start again, would you see? I think I feel really happy about it because we were a day early on this. Do you think we'd see him as a chalk play after last night's performance?
Yeah, how could you not, really? I mean, again, say what you will about Brooklyn, they're much improved this season. They're not Toronto, right? And
right,
if Lin was out there, able to go out there and do 20-9, I would actually be interesting to, you know, see what our system has to say in terms of what this looks like from a betting perspective right now.
You know what? I'm going to pause you there. I'll pause you there real quick because I thought this exact same thing last night, and I was not able to our system pivoted, but I wasn't able to kind of like do all the diligence looking into it. It actually didn't matter because the problem was the scoring was an uptick for sure, and the defense was a downtick. So, and actually that played out because Lin last night was the only Atlanta starter in the negative on the plus minus. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So if you look at plus minus, Collins plus two, Bembry even, Deadman plus six, Young plus three, Lin minus five, and they lost the game by three because they brought him back. They brought him back in for the last 3 minutes, and then they ended up losing because he turned the ball over twice. So, They easily covered the spread, but our system did not have it. So did I cut you off and answer the question? Because I thought that's where you were going. I had the exact same thought.
It was, yeah. I was just mostly wondering, if that extra scoring from Lin would not be as accounted for as some other things. So
it was decently accounted for. Huerter had been getting up. Interesting about Huerter. Huerter had been getting up like 12 to 14 shots a game. Like he had actually turned into having some usage. That was a guy that had been all but non-existent. I hope I'm not overstating that number. He had been all but non-existent in the offense for a long periods of time, but had been getting shots. So it wasn't the biggest one-for-one increase in scoring that you'll see. Anyway, yes to Lin. Are we worried about the blowout? And then on the Brooklyn side, first of all, are we worried about the blowout at all with guys like this? I mean, this is Atlanta still. 14 shots per game over the short term for Huerter. Are we worried about blowout? Are we worried that it's Atlanta? And then we can talk about Brooklyn.
Not especially worried about the blowout. It's going to always come down to who are you deciding between, right? So if it comes down to two equal plays, one is in the Philly-Washington game, one is in the Atlanta-Brooklyn game, you take the tighter spread. But for me, spreads under 10, arbitrary endpoints for the win, tend to be tiebreakers more than they do, like, I'm going to go move my whole lineup. Now, I'm sure we'll talk about the New Orleans-Cleveland game in a second. A 14-point spread there has me much more concerned than a 9-point spread in this game. I also just think Brooklyn, not a totally explosive offense. This would be one of those kind of blowouts by attrition where the Hawks just can't do a single thing. And they just get blown out by accident. But it's not like, again, the Pelicans, who just can go like Harlem Globetrotters on the Cavs in a given game and just be dunking on them every time down the court. They can't do anything on offense. You know, like, I just don't see it as that big a mismatch.
Yeah, and now just as one final note about betting, teams do get a downgrade on road back-to-backs typically. So that is where you lose something like, I can't remember the exact percentage.
You said it was like 40%.
Yeah, it was a non-arbitrary. It was a non-arbitrary number.
The idea was that I think the number you told me was that obviously the average team in an average night is 50-50. On the road back-to-back, they're 40%. It's 40-60 to the home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that sounds correct. Yeah. I will say right now, though, our system does like the Hawks covering the -9 mostly because they don't see Brooklyn getting to 118. So that's as of right now. This would change obviously with any injury news. And on the Brooklyn side, last game, Shabazz Napier mostly, and then Kurucs were pretty heavily owned because they were without Joe Harris and Damari Carroll. Both of those guys are probable to play. For me, you can disagree if you want to, but for me, even against Atlanta, Brooklyn falls into like that Boston realm of when they're all healthy. There's really nothing for me to see here. I need usually like two guys out to really start considering guys on Brooklyn.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a Brooklyn guy. That's not really something I like to do. I've dabbled, you know.
Like last game, like when everyone's injured, Harris and Carroll injured, and you're going to get max minutes out of guys like Napier and guys like Freed coming in off the bench. Sure.
But I take it back. We actually ran D'Angelo Russell. He was $1,000 cheaper. We played him against Chicago. I'm trying to look at some of these game logs to try to remember if I've ever played anyone on Brooklyn. But yeah, it's mostly an opportunity thing. If I can get good opportunity, then I'm willing to do it. And if not, then... And D'Angelo Russell, by the way, was an opportunity thing. Like, he missed a game, came back, and it was clear that he was settling into a higher rotation than what his average had been. So yep. Our system saw him as cheap once we adjusted for the minutes, and we went from there. But
You mentioned the Cleveland New Orleans game. New Orleans is 14-point favorites right now. Cleveland again on the back to back, on the road back to back as well. Just like Atlanta, they lost last night to Indiana, but they actually they kept the game close. I was starting on the Cleveland side. The injury news here is that Larry Nance left the game early with a right knee injury. He's currently questionable. I'd really be shocked if he played. I'm taking back. The note is he's traveling with the team and the injury isn't considered serious, which is weird. He only played 5 minutes and got pulled out of the game to not return. So I'll have to kind of wait on news there on Nance. Hood is questionable still. They did, we got a big game out of Burks, who was a guy in one of our top two FanDuel lineups last night. But you look at this 14-point, down by 14 points. I don't know where to land here on the Cleveland side. If Nance were to sit, I feel like something might open up. You know, assistant does still kind of like Burks. Are you worried are you worried about downgrading minutes for Cleveland because they stink? And I kind of just feel like we get their minutes kind of no matter what. And then we'll talk about New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about both sides of this game, frankly. Like, if I'm going to be involved in playing teams in a blowout, I'd just as soon do it in big tournaments. I will do it for cash games if there aren't better options, and I still will do it in cash games. You know, I think like the Lynn play from last night is an example where like you can justifiably fear the blowout, but the opportunity is just so outrageously better than normal that you can still do it. I think Burks might be there again if he draws the start and Hood's out or whatever. Well, Hood I guess is out right now, but if he just draws the start, then I think you can do it. But man, is this really like New Orleans is up by 12 at halftime? Do you want to be sitting on your whatever other plays on Cleveland where they have like 12 minutes going into the second half and literally anyone could go out there and play? Probably not, right?
Yeah, no, I think so. Like I said, if we get Nance out and we get someone, but even Nance out, like if you've got like Channing Frye in there, I don't think I'd be willing to do it because I wouldn't want to take him to enough minutes. Yeah.
Well, bad teams tend to not be very deep either. Like you talked about Lynn as being like the perfect type of punt play because he was already doing it off the bench. Who are those guys on Cleveland? I guess like Jordan Clarkson would be a guy. If he were to start for some reason, then
he's not. He's never going to start. So
I don't know.
Yeah, no. I think I'm probably with you there. Maybe we see more minutes out of Tristan Thompson because they're going to deal with him. They're going to want his big body inside, and this game just could be over quick. And from that point of view,
you don't want to center at 6,000 on the bad end of a 14-point blowout.
Nah, I'm with you. And that's tied too. Is this a situation where we don't do it often? Like I did it last night with the Warriors with the 18-point spread, where I kind of lowered all their minutes to low 30s, just because it wasn't really worth it from a cash game perspective, and that ended up playing out. They ended up winning by like 30. But are we in the same realm here with the Pelicans guys? Because guys like Anthony Davis, Randall, and Drew Holiday are guys we, you know, for all intents and purposes, we usually go max minutes on, and this strikes me as like maybe the one time where I don't want to do it.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, again, back to that, we had this exact matchup a few games ago. New Orleans played at Cleveland, so the spread wasn't quite as outrageous, but Davis was perceived to be a chalk play. We wound up having him, I think it was like on one site, but not the other. I can't remember exactly how it shook out, but people in the chat were concerned. And my reasoning at the time was that Davis is amazing. If you think he's going to play 40 minutes, he's going to be the best play of the night. I don't know that he necessarily will. So like I kind of split the difference and hedged it a little bit. And I think he wound up not showing up in lineups. He scored 54 fantasy points. And I don't know. I mean, is the true number of minutes he's destined to play in a game like this 28 minutes? Because if it is, you're going to be awfully disappointed, right? So
yeah, you're not going to get the four steals and two blocks that he got in 29 minutes the other day. Now,
probably not, right? I mean,
This is a hard one. I still haven't met pretty max minutes, and it's actually close because there's another guy who's been so unbelievable in the short term that we can probably discuss about where he's going to land in terms of big money payoffs. But guys like Holiday are sort of sniffing around lineups right now. I wouldn't feel that comfortable with it. This one's going to be a tough one. This will be something we discuss in our live stream going into lineup lock, because I think this will matter. What are some of the other options at this point? I think having Harden on this slate does help ease the transition, I think, away from Davis if you're looking at some of the big money plays. So we'll get to that one in a second. San Antonio goes in and plays Memphis in a game that I don't think we're going to spend much time on here. The Spurs are 3-point road favorites over the Grizzlies. I at 203 over under on a game. I mean, this is like 20 to 25 points lower than some of these other games. Anything to even discuss here before we move on?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a big slate. I think we don't need to go too deep on games with low totals, and for teams especially just don't tend to have any good plays anyway. So, right. Yeah, I'm ready for the next one.
All right. The next one is something that we're going to want to tune into.
It's a big one, baby.
Yep, the Bucks and the Rockets. James Harden has been just on some other kind of planet basically since the beginning of December. Like, the numbers are staggering, really, what he's doing right now. He's playing with Chris Paul out. He's playing like 40 minutes a night. He's putting up like 37 points a game with a bunch of it, like, with, you know, almost double digit assists. He's just, and by the way, these aren't even cupcake matchups. Their wins in the last, so they have wins over Denver, Golden State, Memphis, New Orleans, Boston, OKC, Spurs. You kind of have to go like 2 weeks, and they lost to Portland. You have to go like 2 weeks until they play a team that probably isn't going to be in the playoffs. I guess the Pelicans might be on the outside looking in. So these aren't even cupcake matchups. He's destroying the best teams in the business. Is this a place where, even against Milwaukee's awesome on defense, and they're one of the best teams in the league, are we willing to fade Harden here, or on a big slate, is this like, I feel like I don't even want to get away from it at this point. I don't know if you see anything different.
Yeah, I think the floor is too high on Harden, honestly, with the sheer number of minutes he's playing and the raw scoring output. I mean, in the last month, there's a single game where he didn't score more than 32 just regular points from the field. That's outrageous. So the guy's averaging 34 points. And if you figure you're going to start the night with 30 fantasy points, you just don't have to do a whole lot else, even on a 12-6 price tag. You know, I guess people will look to the comp game. That was another Portland game. I'm sorry. But yeah, I think, again, if you're comparing apples to apples, just Harden to Davis, two big money guys, who you're considering tonight, give me the guy in the game that rates to be closer, whose minutes are just totally secured, and whose team completely relies on him for every last damn thing, and I'll just take my chances. You know, if I miss out on a 75-point Anthony Davis night, I'm willing to live with it if I can be pretty confident that I'll get that 60 fantasy point James Harden night.
I keep waiting for the shoe to drop on the rest of these guys that play with him. Like, the lineups that they run out there are like borderline G League cast-off squats.
Yeah, like vintage LeBron on Cleveland in the old days.
God, it might be worse. Like it's unbelievable how bad these guys are. Like Austin Rivers was, no team wanted him. Daniel House was in the G League. Brandon Knight's been hurt for his whole life. Gerald Green's a cast-off. Like, James Ennis has been hurt. And then Hilario's like 47 years old. This is their team. It's
PJ Tucker, come on.
You shot 7 for 11 from 3.
0 points from 33 minutes against Portland.
You know. I will say that our system, and I think I tend to agree with it, likes Milwaukee just straight up in this game and covering the minimal spread that it has on right now. I just clicked off of it. Shoot. Right now it's... Milwaukee is a -1.5 point road favorite. Our system likes them covering this, and I think I tend to agree with that. I just think that there's just got to... They just can't keep going. There's got to be something that stops here. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Harden continues to get to the line 15 times a game or whatever he's getting to, and just continues to bury threes at like a 40% rate, and guys like Austin Rivers are just, you know, have their careers resurrected or whatever. But I think I'd be pretty comfortable betting the Bucks here. On the other side, so I think we're fine with Harden. I think the prices on some of these other guys like House and Rivers and Green might have just come up to a point where I'm not totally comfortable with it. On the Bucks side, I mean, is this a game where I've always been uncomfortable doing it, especially this season, but can we take guys like Giannis and Middleton, Bledsoe, Brogdon, can we take them to max minutes tonight? Like,
That's the real question, in the
opposite theory of where we were going with New Orleans, is this the kind of game that you see Giannis get full minutes? Because I think right now we have him at 34 to 35 minutes. That's really low for a guy at his price point, but certain games, mean that these guys just play. This strikes me as one of them. Would you be comfortable for us taking Giannis like 37 minutes in this game? Because if that's the if that's the case, then we might be, he might be a guy that starts coming in and around lineups.
Right. So, you know, the Bucks have fallen into the old school Warriors category of teams that you just like, you don't even know what the real plan is because they're involved in so many blowouts, right? So if they're going to play in games that are decided by 8, 10, 25 points every single night, teams, and you know, this is the risk about blowouts too. Like a lot of people just picture, ooh, my guy never gets in the fourth quarter, so I'm just like totally screwed. But there's a lot of soft blowouts. Like, you know, they beat Brooklyn by 14 points on December 29th. Could Giannis have played three more minutes if they were just up by a little bit less going into the fourth quarter? Absolutely, right? So I think that increased level of floor just helps us look to, or I'm sorry, that increased level of potential closeness in the game can help us look at the recent track record. And we see a 39-minute game against Toronto, 35 and a half minutes against Utah, in a game that was closer going into the fourth quarter. You have to go pretty far. Again, they just don't play in a lot of close games. You see 34 minutes against New Orleans, but he had four fouls. I think 37 minutes seems totally fair, and I would be very comfortable. Like, it seems like running Giannis against Harden, if there are enough cheap plays to support it, could definitely be a winning cash game strategy.
The difference between 37 minutes on Giannis and 35 is the difference of him being like in zero lineups out of the top 50 and him being
five fantasy points. I get it.
But. In every lineup out of the top 50. Now, what you're getting out of Giannis is the difference. I'm not gonna compare them one to one because one, they're not mutually exclusive. You could just play. There's some chance that things will open up enough to play both, especially if you start getting away from Embiid, right? Like right now we have Embiid in a lot of FanDuel lineups. If you start getting away from Embiid, I think you will probably start to see a situation where it probably does maybe pair Giannis and Harden together. I'm trying to do this on the fly. I can't do it, but we could talk about this on the Twitch stream as well. This one's gonna be a close one. I don't know where I'm gonna land. I'm gonna probably go with you and say we'll take him to 37 minutes. Let's kind of see where it goes. I'll do that with the rest of the starters as well. And I wouldn't be upset if I saw lineups on fan. It's a little harder on DraftKings. I wouldn't be upset to see lineups with both of these guys in it. And look, Giannis is $1,000 cheaper now. And that's because of the minutes. Like, it's because the minutes have been just not having been there. It's not because his points per dollar situation is worse. It's because that he just they haven't really needed to press him. So this will be one of the things that I think we're going to spend a lot of time on going in on our live stream. All right, let's keep moving. 8:30 game. Phoenix goes in and plays Dallas. Phoenix on the back-to-back last night after beating the Kings. They played very well without Devin Booker. We saw more minutes out of Josh Jackson, who was a chalk play, more minutes out of TJ Warren, who was an 85% start. D'Anthony Melton had just, I don't know, 50,000 steals and blocks or something like that in the game. And he's a guy that you had mentioned before. We had talked about him specifically as, can he keep up some of these defensive stats? He had four steals and two blocks last night. Yep. Also got 10, 8, and 4. It looks like Booker is going to be is questionable to play tonight. Where do you stand on some of these Suns guys? Oubre was also another one that played 30 minutes. Would you be comfortable running them on the back-to-back? Like, are they the young team that they probably haven't been totally price corrected that we could go back to here against Dallas?
Maybe. I've been actually lower on some of these Suns guys than a lot of people, I think, just because, well, I mean, aside from Melton, just because, I don't know, bad teams are going to bad team is kind of my philosophy. So, like, a lot of people wanted to play DeAndre Ayton the other day, and let me try to remember what matchup that was. Might have been the Clippers game. I don't know. We were talking about this in chat, and people just keep dreaming on. Basically, you see a few great games. He had that insane game against Denver, and the other one was against Brooklyn, I think. And you see those, and then you start to picture a guy being like, oh, this guy's turning into a $10,000 player. And it's like, but probably he's not, though, right? Like, he's probably not all of a sudden going to be an 18-rebound-a-game guy or whatever, right? So I think a lot of the Suns guys, I'm not quite as high on. I do think Melton, with the defensive stats and just the increased effort, I think he's going to be the type of guy who can stay on the floor a little bit more. And I view him, like that 20 fantasy point game against Charlotte, I kind of view that as around his floor, and 5x points per dollar floor is pretty good for a guy with 10x points per dollar upside. So I would be totally fine playing Melton. I don't know. Again, Dallas is mostly an okay matchup, kind of mix relatively slow pace with pretty bad defensive efficiency. I'd be fine playing some of these guys, but Melton would be the only guy who I wouldn't really go back and see if there was a better option for.
I don't mind Josh Jackson at power forward, just because power forward is typically so bad. I'd love to know the world where FanDuel thinks this guy's a power forward, by the way. I don't know where this I think it's like something just got set and no one even bothered to look at it. The guy's just not a power forward. He doesn't guard power forwards. Power forwards don't guard him. He's 6'8", 200 pounds. Like, he's not built like a power forward. There's nothing about him that's a power forward. Like, at one point they labeled him a power forward and they were like, Well, that's the end of that. Moving on, right? Like, he'll just be a power forward in our system for the rest of his life. It just doesn't...
Fine, we'll take it. Had to look at the recent game log on him, too. I think Jackson's another guy. Seems to be contributing across the board, which you like to see in that, like, in that low fives to high four price range. Seems like a solid play, too.
Yep. I think that we'll have to get the Devin Booker news. He was ruled out. He was doubtful going into the game. They have screwed around with this injury stuff. He's questionable tonight with the back spasm. If Devin Booker played, this whole thing would be off. All these guys, I think, would be off the table for me, because we'd have to revert back to the Devin Booker in the lineup thing. And you can basically take off Warren Jackson and Melton, I think, from the thing. Now, on Dallas side, it's a good matchup here against Phoenix. Phoenix has shown the propensity to get blown out. Doncic coming off a huge game. We actually had him under-owned against the Lakers the other night. He had one of his best games of the season. With some of these other big money payoffs, our system has Doncic just a little too expensive, especially for the amount of minutes that he's going to play. He is questionable right now, but it's such a great matchup against Phoenix. Quick thoughts here on Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas, I don't know. Dennis Smith Jr. was, I guess, surprisingly to me, a very chalk option when Bray and those guys sat. And it was Bray and Harris, I guess, that both sat. And I guess, like, for me, Dallas, the thing I've just been hating about Dallas all season long is that they have this plan to just spread out the minutes and not really make anyone a good fantasy play. And like Luka Doncic is another guy. I don't know how many times this year I've had to talk people off of the Doncic ledge, and he just doesn't. He'll have like one game, and this is, again, I swear to God, the people who do the FanDuel algorithms or whatever are just like fans of certain teams and just like certain guys more than others, because Doncic's price, I just won't understand. The guy's one game where he scores 45 fantasy points. Now I have to pay $8,100 for this guy. What about the 8-game stretch prior to that where he didn't top 36 fantasy points? Yep. Like, just totally unexcited by this team. I mean, it's a good matchup. Again, like, there are short slates where I haven't even looked, but if there's like an 8:30 on slate and Harrison Barnes is there or something, like, I don't know. I guess I could close my nose and stomach it, but man, by and large, it's just not really my thing. DeAndre Jordan, you know, he's a guy that on a per-minute basis, we've dabbled in a little DeAndre from here and there. Just, again, a look at the recent game log shows you that can bite you as often as it can help you. But, you know, I can imagine the system at least being intrigued in what amounts to a very solid matchup for him.
Yeah, I think I generally agree with all those thoughts. Like you say, you're just not going to get more than 35 minutes out of Doncic. It's just not going to happen. And when that's the case, like, unlike the Giannis thing where you could, because the game stays close, we have every kind of game script on him to know that that's just not going to be the plan.
Well, we know the upside is 35 minutes.
That's it.
So if you're sitting there and you're in wild, magical Christmas land and you're like, what's the best scenario for Doncic tonight? It's 35 minutes and he scores 42 fantasy points. So,
yep.
Famous last words. He'll be better than that now.
In terms of when we talk about correcting pricing algorithms, FanDuel really has done it this year, because Orlando goes in and plays Utah. Utah is without Exum and without Rubio. And I was all about the Raul Neto train here, and they just brought his price up to $5,900, like in a second. He's still pretty cheap on. I really actually wouldn't even spend too much time in this game, except I want to talk about Neto and maybe Gobert. But he's still $4,300 on FanDuel. Excuse me, on DraftKings.
Yeah, you play him on DraftKings at 43.
I think people thought we'd see more like Joe Ingles kind of stuff. I did tick up guys like sort of like their secondary ball handlers, like Mitchell, Ingles, even Royce O'Neal a little bit off the bench. I have Neto about 35 minutes, though. He played 29 when Rubio left last game. Is that that can't get you there at 6,000 though on FanDuel, right? Like I don't think we're gonna get there on his price. Now could we see, like, I mean, what's like the top end minutes on Neto? They're really out of ball handlers at this point. Like Rubio did play at something like 10 minutes that last game. They played 5 minutes and Neto played 29. What's the top end minutes you think on a guy like Neto?
37 minutes, 38 minutes, and that would be a lot for him. They've never really wanted to do that in the past. You know, these situations, the other thing that tends to happen is they'll bring guys just kind of like out of the woodwork that you didn't even realize could be in consideration. And just looking at the Jazz, I have no idea, but like Grayson Allen, he's a guy who's played 13 to 15 minutes in games before. Naz Mitru Long, not a name I've ever heard of, just to be totally honest with you. But
right.
You know, they have other short, fast guys on their roster. And, you know, one thing about Neto is he has been a guy who can play a lot of minutes and do absolutely nothing with them in the past, too. So I like him at 4,300 on DraftKings. On FanDuel, I would not be stretching for 5,900 almost no matter what.
Yeah, and I'm not interested in the Orlando side of this at all against Utah. No. But I think it's really just Neto. I can maybe be talked into Gobert because I think it's a decent matchup and they've been playing him a solid amount of minutes. I'd be interested to see where people land with Ingles and Mitchell with the no point guard situation. That's not really
Gobert, by the way, cheap on DraftKings too. He's another guy that our system will just never be able to get away from on DraftKings at mid $7,000 price tags. It comes and goes, but I think the recent game log supports it. So actually on DraftKings, I think you could see Gobert in a really high percentage of our men.
I should have mentioned Capella from that point of view too. He's still sub 8,000 on DraftKings. This guy just is playing like 37 minutes a game, just double-doubling every single game.
I don't need him against Milwaukee. Yeah,
and Milwaukee has had trouble against centers. Now it'd be interesting to see how much they get Lopez away from the basket, but I'm not worried. I could be talking to Capella there as well. Let's finish us off with the 10 o'clock game. Chicago goes in and plays Portland. I'm not really seeing much of anything here. Mo Harkless is going to be out, so I guess that's going to matter if we're going to get maybe an Evan Turner start. That did happen last game that Harkless sat, I believe. Outside of that, and I realized because this news came in late, I had not adjusted the minutes on Harkless yet for the Turner thing. Outside of possibly that, and they're still 9.5-point favorites, is there anything that you like on the Portland side? I'm willing to basically almost write Chicago off at this point. I don't like anything about this team. But let me just 31 minutes out of Turner last time Harkless sat, didn't really do a whole lot. He's not going to see much usage at all when he shares the court with Lillard and McCollum. Is that a play you'd be interested in if you got the start again? Other than that, I'm not really seeing much here.
Yeah, Turner. You know, he was a little cheaper the last time around. I think you can absolutely consider it. Like, he doesn't do a whole lot with Lillard and McCollum out there, but just getting the 30 minutes out of him, he contributes enough across the board that I think you could stomach it. There's other existential concerns for me in this game too. This is a game, you know, it's funny, the games have a similar spread, but the blowout risk feels more real to me in a 9.5-point spread game here, Portland versus Chicago versus, you know, the Brooklyn-Atlanta game that we talked about earlier. So I could see a little bit more rest for guys like McCollum or Lillard. Wouldn't be interested in playing them at what amount to fair prices for them. This game, by and large, for me, will be one I hope to avoid.
All right, final game. Detroit goes in and plays the Lakers. Lakers coming off that big game against Dallas the other night where we saw just monster games out of guys like Hart. Ingram was excellent. Lonzo Ball got his one out of every three games where he's really good at his price point. The game has a 217.5 over-under. I still feel like we can go max minutes on these Lakers guys. They're still without LeBron, LeBron's out, and that's really the only other injury news for this game. I feel like we can go max minutes on these guys, and when you can do that for the Lakers, they are going to be in contention, and I'm talking really about all of them, even with the price increases, because this is one of the few teams where you can tag Kuzma at 40 minutes and Ingram at 40 minutes and Hart at 40 minutes. Like, you can just do that with the Lakers, unlike some other teams. At that point, how much safety do you feel like those minutes give you, even if maybe their points per dollar aren't quite what they were when LeBron first went out?
Yeah, I think it's totally fine. I mean, Hart and Ingram in particular are the guys that I'm interested in here. I think Kuzma, you know, I just always get nervous about guys who are, especially Kuzma, whose injuries have been always kind of like nagging and persistent. And I feel as though they've manifested not only in a reduction in minutes, but sometimes a reduction in performance, since so much of his ability to produce comes from basically just banging out rebounds and, you know, really getting in there and getting himself dirty, you know. So I think Kuzma would be the least exciting of that group for me, but I could absolutely see playing Hart and Ingram, especially on FanDuel, where the prices really haven't corrected enough for my taste.
Well, here's the thing. Kuzma is a volume shooter, so Kuzma can get there if the shot's falling, but he's going to be streaky in this. Like, he went 4 for 20 last game, 2 for 10 from 3. You're just going to get that from him, and at 7,100, you're not going to get it every game. Some of those games are going to be 10 for 20 and 4 for 10, and then all of a sudden you're looking at a great game. Like, the usage for him is there. So at 30, and by the way, it's a really good sign for him that he came back from the nagging injury and he played 37 minutes, because that was off a game or two that he had missed. If that's the case, I think taking him to 40 minutes is going to get him close to being there, and I'm just not, I'm still at 7,000. I get a little worried. Same with Ingram. He took 21 shots last game, was excellent. And then Josh Hart took 13 shots. Really still is running so bad from three, 1 for 5 from three, but still pulled down 12 rebounds, had 5 steals. You're not going to be able to recreate that. But I watch highlights of him on defense. The steals for him, well, he's not going to get 5 a game. If he's going to play 44 minutes, the kind of defense he played, like, he was really, really like ball hawking the entire game, which is really, really tough to do when you play 44 minutes because you just get tired. Like, I hate to say it, but I know these guys are NBA players, but to play 44 minutes and to play lockdown defense the entire time, you will see the steals kind of like materialize in that kind of case. I think I'm fine being, final note here. Are you fine being overly bullish on Lakers minutes as it stands? Again, Hart played 44 minutes last game. I don't see why that would change this game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, like, I just like those plays. I don't know. There's nothing really else I can say about it.
Oh, on that note, let's get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com for short. To go and get a free trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. NFL, while the season trucks along, NHL, which has been great since we released that in the last month. So it's all covered under one subscription package. You're not going to find a better deal in the industry than that, especially for the price point. So other sites like to section it off by who writes the article or whose numbers they are or whatever BS that some of the other sites do. We just put it all out under one subscription package. DFSR.com/deals gets you started there. So go check that out. We'll be live on Twitch tonight talking lineup lock as we get into some of the, you know, really starting to break down some of the injury stuff that I'm sure will pop up over a big Wednesday in basketball. Buddy, talk to you tonight on Twitch, and then we'll be back again Friday for the podcast.
Peace.